left chairman of the board of ICANN. I would like to ask this. They're going to have a very short statement, introductory statement, and I would like to ask each of you this. When you ask a question, if you would just introduce yourself by name and your news organization, that would be most helpful. Okay? We are also making an audio recording of this, an MP3 recording, which will be posted on the press page of ICANN's website. That's ICANN.org/press. So there will be an audio recording there. We're going a little old school. We wanted to be able to take questions for those who are monitoring the stream, the audio stream of this news conference. We're having a few technical problems in that regard. So for those of you out there who are listening to the audio stream, if you want to simply email me your questions, my email address, brad.white@icann.org, I will read those questions. Okay? So with that, I'll turn it over to Rod Beckstrom, our Chief Executive Officer.
Thank you very much, Brad. And thank all of you very much for joining today. The Chairman, Mr. Peter Dengate Thresh, and I will keep our remarks fairly short so that we can respond to your questions. We want to thank you for coming. We want to thank the Kenyan government, and others for hosting this ICANN meeting. It's truly a thrill to be here for the first time in ICANN's history for its major international meeting. This is the seventh time in Africa and the second time in sub-Saharan Africa, and we are truly thrilled to be here and highly appreciative. Africa has been an innovator in a number of areas related to the Internet. In northern Africa, Egypt, for example, was a contributor to international domain names, to the technology, as well as the policy development, and one of the first four non-Latin character names in the world will be for .misra, for Egypt, was approved recently by ICANN. Kenya has been an innovator, not only in building out this excellent fiber optic network rapidly across the country, but also in many different payment systems that are taking place in the Internet. And Kenya has also contributed very significantly to the ICANN policy development process. Kenya has been a highly active member of the Government Advisory Committee of ICANN. There is a at-large structure that is active here in the East Africa area that has contributed to ICANN policymaking. And so we're extremely appreciative to be here and to support the ongoing global unity of the Internet. And if you look at our goal in ICANN, or our vision of one world, one Internet, everyone connected, it finishes with everyone connected. Well, there's a billion people in Africa that need to be online for everyone to be connected. And so we're delighted to see the progress that's being made in this region by the technology leaders, and we hope to see more of that. As we mentioned as well in my speech and remarks, we would be honored to have the heads of state of the African countries from IGAD, who are meeting here tomorrow, to walk. They'll be in the building already in a different meeting. We hope they will walk across the hallway and join our meeting, because that's a few small steps for them, but a huge leap for Africa, for more visibility and leadership of the heads of states in the Internet policy area, because the Internet is truly the developmental platform for the future. So we're grateful for Kenya and other countries in Africa helping to show that way, and we'll be happy to answer your questions, but first I'd like to hand it over to our chairman, Mr. Peter Dengate Thresh.
Thank you, Rod. I'd like to begin also by thanking the government of Kenya and the KENIC and all of the local internet ecosystem for the welcome we've received in this fabulous country. The other thing that's worth noting about this meeting is the excellent attendance. We've just left the opening ceremony, which was completely full, and that's a tribute, I think, to Kenya. I'm just going to pick out a couple of things that are going to be significant for us in this coming week, and the first of these is some major steps in a six-year project that we have had for enlarging the generic domain name space, the GTLDs. You'll all be familiar with the famous generic top-level domains like .com and .net and .org. For a number of years, we've been working, first of all, on the policy for enlarging that. We had a couple of programs in early years that were quite restrictive, and we've been working on a way of having a much more open process for introducing new top-level domains. And the process now is basically that anyone who wants one who can show that they have the technical and other capacity to run the registry and can fight off any competitors who may also want to run the same one, will be allowed to run a new top-level domain. So if you want to put in .wine or .shoes or .television or .anything that attracts you and may attract customers to your websites, and you can show us that you have the capacity to run such a registry, and you can beat off, as I say, any competitors, you will be allowed the opportunity to run a new registry. And that policy's taken 4 years, and we've been working for the last 2 years on the implementation for that. Now, this is a significant project. It's an extraordinary amount of work that's gone on already, and I expect at the board meeting this Friday for the board to be voting on a number of significant resolutions that will settle some of the implementation issues to take that project forward. It won't be finished, but it'll be a major set of milestones that we will have achieved. In the next step, we'll be publishing what we hope to be the final of the draft process of the application process, so that when we come to meet again in Brussels in just under 3 months' time, we will be very close to announcing the application date for that process to start. So that's tremendously exciting for entrepreneurs, cultural groups, other countries who want domain names. The government of Kenya, for example, might be interested in sponsoring .Kenya. There's no limit to the way that may be used. Rod's already mentioned one of the CCTLDs, the country codes that have been taking advantage of another extraordinary piece of technology, and that is the conversion process that is the DNS. You need to understand that the key to accessing the internet is the addressing system. You have to have an address, which is like a telephone number in many ways, to get onto the internet. But that's very complicated, so overlying that is the domain name system. And the domain name system takes a word previously in English, like .com, and maps that onto the correct address. Now, to make the system work in languages other than English, so that a character set in Japanese or Cyrillic or Greek or any of the other many, many scripts of the world, to make that mapping system also work from that language to the address has been a major piece of technical work. We're very proud of the work we've done that area. We tested it very thoroughly because, of course, we're doing this as the internet is running. We can't just stop the internet to allow us to test these things. We've inserted those trial ones, and now we're actually putting in very shortly the real ones, so that people can have their entire email address, their domain name, in the script of their choice. And the last thing I want to mention is a very important step under a brand new contract that we have with the United States government. We had previously a system where the United States government would very frequently review the work that ICANN was doing. That arrangement came to an end in September of last year, and we've shifted to a very much more exciting regime where we are now being reviewed by you, by the world. The global community is now responsible, or has the ability, to check up on ICANN. How are we doing in managing these important resources that underpin the internet? We've got to do a review on a couple of aspects of ICANN's performance in relation to our accountability. How accountable are we to you, the world, for our conduct? And how transparent are we? Can you find out what we're doing when you want to know? So we will be building a global multi-stakeholder team to conduct a review of ICANN's accountability and transparency. I have the responsibility, along with the chairman of the Governmental Advisory Committee, of selecting that team. We will be working here in Nairobi. We've called for nominations from all around the world. Those have come in, and we will be putting that team together to carry out that very important review. So there's three things, I think, that we expect to see some major progress on here in Nairobi. So, Brad, I'll hand over back to you, or if Rod wants to come back, and take some questions.
So,
my name is Rebecca from IDG, and my concern is when you spoke at the plenary and asked, and even now when you're asking African governments to come and join, or African leaders to come and join ICANN, I heard you speak more about the GAC and what the GAC can do, and not so much about the challenges that Africa have, like re-delegation issues. Does that mean that such issues do not hold much of importance to you? And then my second question is that I appreciate when you say that Africa has made great strides in terms of getting more online and more people to come to the internet and all that. But ICANN has 3 offices in the U.S. I've seen you introduce new members of staff, and all of them are Americans and all that. Is ICANN really committed to this internationalization, or it's just more in theory than in practice? How come you don't have an office in Africa?
Sure. Thank you, and I'll respond to that. The first part of the question, I think, was about the role of the Government Advisory Committee and what it does. It is an advisory committee to the board of ICANN, which offers official advice to the board of directors, and which it does on a very frequent basis, both verbally and in writing, and has an extremely important role. And its considerations must be considered by the ICANN board, as Peter could explain in more depth. With respect to the question about delegation of CCTDLDs or the country code top-level domains, that is a very sensitive issue that is handled according to strict guidelines, and delegation processes are public in terms of the policies that are published, but delegation activities are always private between the country code operators and the ICANN IANA function. So I can't comment specifically about any delegation activities in Africa. That is up to those country code operators themselves to discuss. We do not do that. We don't have the right to discuss that. It's not been brought to my awareness that there are significant issues there, but perhaps there are, and that is handled by the IANA group. And the last comment is about the globalization of ICANN. Clearly, I think we have a long way to go. The Internet was started as a U.S. government research project in 1969, over 40 years ago, and the Internet is on an arc from being what effectively was 100% American when it started to moving towards 100% global. And ICANN itself, as an organization that was created by the United States government to give coordination over to the private sector globally through a multi-stakeholder body, through an organization created in California but also operating under international law, as was also mentioned in the recent panel declaration. And in terms of the recent officers, all three are American, and all three processes, except for the D.C. position, had quite a significant number of candidates, but the candidates that won the positions based on their experience in the end and were chosen by the management team had those attributes. I think that we'll be looking in the future, certainly, as CEO, I do want to see the operations become more global. We have a financing challenge. Over 90% of our revenues as a nonprofit on the domain names come from North America. So most of the country code operators in Africa and around the world, many of them do not make a contribution to ICANN's operational activities. And so one of the issues we need to look at and address over time is how to have the support of the world so that we can also operate fully in the world. And there's some soft relationship there. But certainly my goal as CEO is to see the organization become significantly more global over time. And Peter, you might wish to expand on the GAC role, since that really reports into you.
Let me take the last point first about the commitment to internationalization. That is very strongly a board commitment, and in fact, in relation to the tasks the board has given the CEO to carry out, increasing internationalization of ICANN is one of them. And we are monitoring that performance because of the commitment that we've made. We already do have a significant element of internationalization, and if you take the board itself, it's chaired by someone from New Zealand, the vice chairman comes from Ireland, and we've got representatives from Norway and Chile and countries in between. The stakeholders themselves come from all over the world, and we're seeing that here at this meeting. There's about 40 different countries represented in the Government Advisory Committee, and probably at least that number coming in the meetings. The formality of the GAC is that when the GAC gives the board advice, we are required to take that very seriously and to follow it unless we respond in writing saying why we're not. Let me also just pick up on the delegation-redelegation point. One of the reasons for the formation of the Country Code Name Support Organisation, one of the major policy shops in ICANN, a corporate division, if you like, of the company, deals with country code managers. that organization has the policy, has the power and responsibility under our bylaws for making the rules about delegation and redelegation. That group has set up a working group, and I spoke yesterday at the launch of the working group, that's going to make sure that the policies that we use for delegation and redelegation of country codes are appropriate. And I'm pleased to report that that meeting was very well attended by a wide range of country code managers, but also by a wide range of officials from government with whom the CC people are working very closely. So as a matter of process, the delegation issue, I think, is being properly addressed at the right level.
Other questions?
Yes. My name is Alex from CIO East African Magazine. I just wanted you to expound on the IPv6 issue that you are saying that there's a myth that there's an availability of IPv6 addresses in Africa. I just wanted you to explain on that and expound on that.
Certainly. Yes. The Internet Protocol 6 is a new version of the Internet Protocol for routing messages and packets around the world. One of the major reasons IPv6 was developed was that the network address space in IPv4 was limited to around 4 billion addresses, and most of those have been allocated. We have less than 10% of the IPv4 space remaining. That was one of several motivations for IPv6. Under IPv6, there are approximately 300 million trillion potential addresses available. And there's been a mythology and stories spread out there by certain parties that there's not enough internet addresses for developing countries. Nothing could be further from the truth. We have more than enough internet addresses to give 1 trillion internet addresses to every man, woman, and child in the world, and certainly including the continent of Africa. Those are available. They're distributed through AFRINIC, which is a regional internet registry, which there's 5 in the world. AFRINIC is an excellent registry, founded by Nick Quaynor, who's also at this event. And AFRINIC has 800 members. It itself is a collaborative body. 800 members, which are internet service providers, technology companies, other businesses that need internet addresses to use or share with their customers. AFRINIC has all that it needs in terms of Internet 6 addresses, and it can get more at any time that it needs them from ICANN. It is already distributing them, and all any member needs to do is fill out a very simple form and state that they have a need, and they will receive them. So this mythology about IPv6 addresses not being available in Africa or not being available to enough companies is a complete fabrication. It is not true. And it's important that that truth come to the table, that there are enough addresses, because some companies might be holding back from planning to leverage or use IPv6 addresses if they do not think that they're available. And again, AFRINIC has assured me that they will distribute at any time to any of their members who request. And we further commit to support AFRINIC to make sure we make sure AFRINIC has what it has, because ICANN is the central global authority in allocating network addresses. Those go to the regional internet registry, such as AFRINIC, which then get distributed to their members. Around the world, there's about 30,000 members in the entire system. So there is not a lack of IPv6 addresses. There's a flood of IPv6 addresses. It's an enormous number, and we're delighted they're already being in use in Africa. To be clear, the whole global internet today is only actually using a few billion internet addresses. So when any member in Africa gets over a trillion, which is the smallest allocation, they have over 1,000 times all the addresses in use in the whole world today. So there's no lack. There's a surplus. There's more than enough. And so we're happy to allocate them. And we'd like to hear from you anywhere you hear that someone represents that that's not the case.
Gentleman in the back there.
My name is Henry Gedaiga from Citizen. I wanted to know, it's all good that you have all these addresses available for people in Africa. However, at the end of the day, the thing that is troubling Africa is content development. We are already flooded by a lot of content from outside Africa. What is ICANN doing to help develop African content.
Sure. Let me present what we do by giving a simplified model of the internet. And I'd like to describe the internet as a three-layer cake. The bottom layer of the cake are the pipes and the plumbing. That's like the new fiber optic line, the link in Mombasa, or the antennas. Anything that moves the messages is pipes and plumbing. Middle layer is traffic and routing. The top layer are applications and content. ICANN is only concerned with the middle layer of traffic and routing. Traffic and routing is done by a combination of internet protocols, or IPv4 or 6, and then the domain name system, which ICANN is the global coordinator for through our multi-stakeholder process. So we are only concerned with traffic and routing. So we are very concerned about domain name system security, for example. We're concerned that, as Peter mentioned, that we have more top-level domains. For example, we received a letter from the chief of the Zulu tribe that he would like to have .Zulu or is interested in applying for .Zulu as a top-level domain. That's a concern to us. We do not address content issue or the application layer explicitly, so we rely upon the good people, you know, of Africa and the world to create the content as they see fit.
Just a quick follow-up on that. The other thing that we don't do is the bottom layer. We often asked, what are we doing to help roll out fiber, roll out cable, roll out that kind of capacity building, and equally for the reasons Rod has given, that's not our job. We're happy to cooperate with people in the top layer and the bottom layer, and we have close relations with some of them, but that's not our job. You don't want us getting into that because we wouldn't be any good at it. What we're good at, or what we try to be good at, is the middle layer.
Question?
My name is Alfred Kitty from Deutsche Welle Radio. Is ICANN concerned about this internet fraud? And if it is concerned, what steps is it taking to curb internet fraud?
Sorry, is that internet fraud?
Fraud? Yeah.
Fraud?
Oh, fraud?
Yep.
Yes. We are concerned with the parts that relate to traffic and routing. So we're concerned about the domain name system. So, for example, on Friday, we had the first ever training we had globally on a DNS CERT, or Computer Emergency Response Team, meeting with different country code operators across Africa. I think there were 20 or 30 country operators present to talk about how to protect the domain name system from botnet attacks, which are one type of cybersecurity attack that can be used and leveraged in fraudulent activities. For example, you can use a botnet attack to overload the computer servers of a company, so you can then go and attack other areas of the company and they're not able to protect it. So we are involved with that. We're also involved with the Whois system, which records who's registered domain names. But there's a lot of discussion around Whois on what are the privacy rights of people in different countries around the world. So we have some involvement in fraud, but only as it affects the domain name system or the addressing system. And if people are trying to use those systems explicitly for fraud, then we become involved.
Rod, we had a question that came in that was emailed from a journalist in Germany. You had issued a request and urged African leaders to join the governmental advisory committee by the time of our next meeting in Brussels. The question was, realistically, how many members of GAC do you think will you gain today in that appeal to African nations?
I don't know. That's up to the leaders of the countries of Africa to decide. We certainly hope we get at least one, and we'd be thrilled if we got 5 or 10 as the message spreads out. You know, again, Kenya's been a real leader here, has been heavily involved. Gambia, you know, as we've seen with our board of director, Katim Touré. South Africa, many African countries have been involved. 20 have been involved and are involved in the GAC, but over 30 countries are not involved. We would like to see every country every nation in Africa involved in our government advisory committee. We would also be very happy to see at what we call at-large structures in every country. There's over 22 at-large structures across Africa that whether they're linking libraries together on the internet or working to help farmers or working to spread education on DNS security, many different topics and issues. So we would love to see this rich internet ecosystem growing across Africa, and we will do our best to support that.
Brad, let me follow up on that, because getting governments into the GAC is very important. But remember, ICANN is a multi-stakeholder body. Everybody who is affected by the operation of the internet has a role in making the policy that affects them. So there's also a call out to have the business communities come and join the business constituency. There's a call out to make sure that the country code managers are coming and joining in at the country code level, that the intellectual property lawyers who are concerned about intellectual property rights and their infringement on the internet, they've got a place to come as well. All of the different pieces need input from the African equivalents. Otherwise, those policies will be made and your voices won't be heard. So in addition to the call to the GAC, let's be clear, there's a standing call out to all parts of the ecosystem to come to ICANN. It's completely transparent. It doesn't cost you anything to participate. In terms of there's no membership fee to come and take part in these processes. So let's get that very clear. We want everybody coming that's affected by the policies that we make.
Maria, you had a question?
Thank you. I'm Maria Farrell. I'm writing with the Crooked Timber blog. There's been quite a bit of media coverage of the independent review panel decision on the potential .XXX domain, and I just wondered, are you expecting any developments on that during this week or in the coming weeks and months?
Thanks, Maria. I'll take that one. Yes, the bylaws require us to consider the decision of the independent panel, and we have started that process already, and there will be further consideration of it at the board meeting on Friday. I'm not able at this stage to say what the board is going to do, but at least we will be meeting the bylaw requirement of considering the decision. I have to also say how pleased we are, I suppose, that this piece of our accountability mechanism has been tested. This is the first case that's gone through this particular process, and pleased that it obviously works. I'm not sure whether you people are aware of the situation, but this was an applicant who had applied for a top-level domain and was turned down. They objected to that and said that the process by which we rejected their application was unfair, and took that to this independent panel that we have for reviewing the decisions of the board. They went through that process, the panelists were appointed, parties called their evidence, had a hearing, and now a decision has been issued. So at a practical level, we're very pleased that this system has been tested and obviously provides a mechanism for members of the community to use when they feel that a decision of the board requires independent review. Where we go, it's probably a bit early to tell, but watch what happens on Friday.
I'm Judith. I work for KBC. In your answer to his question about fraud, and you spoke about that sometimes you track and ensure that whatever you're routing, whatever traffic is going through your systems, is not being used for fraudulent purposes. My question is, have you had any instances where any of your domains have been used for fraudulent purposes, and what did you do about that?
Sure. One of the biggest exploitations of the domain name system in the last 2 years, which was not yet used for fraud but posed incredible threats, was a botnet called Conficker, Conficker. This botnet infected millions of machines globally. And at one point, I think, was up to estimated 10 to 15 million PCs and computers around the world infected. And then the operator of that botnet could instruct those machines to do bad things, like send so many requests to a corporate server or government server that those servers might go down. A voluntary movement of major corporations came together called the Conficker Working Group to spread methods to stop the spread of Conficker. ICANN was asked, and we joined that group early on, and we were then asked to get other countries involved around the world in the battle against Conficker. We were able to bring in 100 countries around the world in only 2 months. I don't know the exact number. No one knows the exact number of Conficker infestations today or number of machines. Estimates are generally around 3 to 5 million. If this abatement had not occurred, certainly 50 or perhaps 100 million computers or more in the world could have been infected with that botnet. And as I mentioned, those botnets are used in different types of attacks, whether it's a political attack or a banking attack and others. And clearly, there's parties that try to use the domain name system in different ways to hide and conceal their identity. And we frequently cooperate with law enforcement around the world who have requests for appropriate information. But most of that work is done in each individual country with those country code operators. I mean, if you take .ke for Kenya or .tz for Tanzania, we don't even have that data. We like anyone, can access who is data online, but the official registry data is held by KENIC in Kenya and by the Tanzanian operator at .tz and so on across Africa. So ICANN is not the primary source of information, but we play a role in helping to support security efforts of different parties. And, of course, we have in the policy working groups, the voices of law enforcement and the voices of cybersecurity are very present from the private sector companies, also from governments around the world. And so they are working on policies. And we have a security and stability advisory committee for the board. We have a root server advisory committee that focuses on stability. And we have sub-working groups on security. So ICANN is one important platform for cybersecurity collaboration, particularly, again, as it relates to the DNS. And there are others in the world, and then we cooperate and collaborate with most of the other platforms that exist as well.
We have one online question that I wanted to ask you, gentlemen, from Kevin Murphy, a journalist in the UK. I want to ask you this because I think it's important. He said, can you ask Rod and Peter about expressions of interest and the potential for creating a secondary market in TLD applications? Would it be a bad thing? If so, what measures could be taken to prevent it?
This is a part of this new GTLD process that I talked about earlier. What we're contemplating is creating a pre-registration process. We're moving away from the terminology expression of interest because we think the better way of managing that is actually to open up a pre-registration process where people who are wanting to become the operator of a new top-level domain can indicate their interest by paying a portion of the registration fee on earlier. That will give us an opportunity to see the kinds of applications that are coming forward. So if, for example, there's a whole lot of competing ones for a particular class, we'll know that we need to be able to deal with that particular thing. So that's what that program is, a way of getting in early. The question is, will people start trading their ability, their position in there, and is that a bad thing? I'm not sure that they will. It's going to cost $55,000 to pre-register against an eventual application fee of about $185,000 and probably a fee of costs of between $500,000 and $1 million to run a registry. So you're not dealing with cavalier or fly-by-night operators in the main. Firstly, and the second thing is it's only going to be a reasonably limited round. We're not expecting hundreds of thousands of applications because of the readiness of various other parts of the ecosystem. So I don't personally think that we're going to see a market open up in these. But the next question is, well, is it a bad thing? I'm not sure that it's a bad thing. There is a huge amount of trading in domain names at this stage, and nobody seems to suggest that that's bad. There's a huge market. A lot of jobs are sustained by trading in domain names. A lot of businesses set up to run them. So to my mind, it's not actually a problem. So I wouldn't be thinking we'd be looking at ways of trying to curtail it.
Other questions?
Hello.
Microphone.
Okay, can you hear now? My name is Michelle Chaplow. I work for AuntLucia.com. I was really shocked to hear about the price of internet in the African nations. What can ICANN do to actively encourage the dropping of that price so that many African citizens can have the internet readily available to them?
Sure. To be clear, in my speech, what I was reflecting was sort of the will of the people of Africa as I hear it, and as someone who cares much about development in Africa. The pipes and plumbing layer is up to the private sector and to the governments in these countries to work out. The only thing we can do is do our best to continue to serve the domain name system operators, the provision of IP addresses as they needed to build out networks. Whenever you build out a new network and add devices, you need IP addresses, and to continue to liberalize the domain name. And otherwise, I think that as a part of the ecosystem, we're an advocate for spreading the internet everywhere, but it's not directly in the set of actions that we take.
Okay, thank you.
Anyone else? Any other questions?
There's one behind the camera there.
Yes. Hi, my name is Sir Michael Loma from the East African. Now, just one question. What can ICANN do to, encourage the use of internet in Africa, considering that currently we have only about 3%?
We've got air conditioning going on just above us, so we're having trouble hearing. Could you just say that again, only a bit louder? Thank you.
Thank you.
What can ICANN do to encourage internet use in Africa, considering that currently we only have 3% internet users? And related to that, you are talking of IPv4 could cover 4 billion names, which I'm sure Africa has very little of that 4 billion. Do you think the continent is ready for IPv6, and will it really benefit?
Sure. The first thing I would comment on is AFRINIC has received all the IPv4 addresses that it's asked for according to the policies that are established by the five RIRs. They have a very clear set of policies, and AFRINIC is treated equally with all of them. So however addresses have been allocated since AFRINIC was created, that process has been consistent. Now, clearly, when you have fewer internet devices in a continent, then you have fewer addresses that you've used. Okay, so the historic consumption in Africa has been lower, but again, that should not be a concern. There's more than enough IPv6 addresses. Secondly, there's a lot of movement in the industry to be more efficient in how they're using IPv4 addresses, so there can continue to be IPv4 address space availability for some period of time.
Let me pick up a bit of that, if I may. Again, we've got to be careful that we don't stray into the application layer. So it's not ICANN's job to do content or putting things up on the internet or encouraging use. But what we can do and what we try to do is make sure we do our bit in our layer that Rod described very well. And that means doing things like creating competition and choice about the things that we deal with. That's why we've got the new top-level domain program, so that your communities can be creating and inventing and selling and buying and trading in domain names that reflect the needs of that particular community. And a portion of that, a subset of that, is of course switching out of having to do it entirely in English. We've started with the names of countries, but very shortly we will be opening up a program so that all domain names, or any new domain names, can be in any script. We do it by making sure that the bit that we do works well. So we've got a goal of 100% uptime of the DNS. So that's how we do it, by making sure that all the bits that we're responsible for go well. The other thing we do it is by doing it by bottom-up processes, so that if you've got a need in your community, if you want a policy in relation to the internet that reflects and affects your community, you can come to ICANN and make sure that policy happens. And the other thing we do is we do everything completely transparently. You will see on Friday something that doesn't happen anywhere else in the world, that a board of a global multinational organization is going to meet in public and conduct all its affairs openly. And the day before that, the board sits on stage and is accessible to questioning, interrogation, participation by all members of the internet community from all around the world. We will be taking online questions from people all over the world about the activities of ICANN. So what we do to make things work is make sure that the stuff we do openly, transparently, and with as much involvement of the community as possible.
Sure. And let me give you one small example of where we can help in that middle layer that helps build out the system in Africa. I had discussions this morning with a senior African government leader who asked for our assistance in establishing and enhancing their country code top-level domain operations, and said that ICANN was already being helpful, but they were asking for more assistance. And I assured the gentleman that we would do everything we could to provide the support that they needed. So that, because for a country and for a people and an internet community to have a country code operator, it does require some level of technical support. And ICANN does not operate those registries. Those are all operated independently, but we can help provide support, training, capacity building, et cetera, so that operators can be successful. In the same way, we're doing that in Africa now on cybersecurity and building up the dialogue, and it's a two-way exchange. There's a lot of experience here that the rest of the world can learn from as well.
We've got time for about one more question. Does anybody have one last question?
If Brad, if there isn't one, let me perhaps just wrap up the last point on that last point, and that is, although ICANN doesn't actually address these things, the fact is that at an ICANN meeting, there are a lot of very talented, very skillful people that are active in all parts of the internet ecosystem. So while they're here addressing issues inside the ICANN mandate, many of them are also doing a lot of other things. So there's a whole lot of associated meetings around ICANN where members of the business community, members of the intellectual property community, are meeting with local business to develop local business opportunities. So we do find that the fact of an ICANN meeting and all the talent from all over the world that comes in various areas is then available for the various regional and local communities to draw on. And we find that, in fact, when we've been to a place, we go back a year or so later, we find there's been a lot of incubation, a lot of exchange of ideas, a lot of development comes from this concentration of talent that sort of happens around an ICANN meeting.
With that, let me thank both these gentlemen. Thank you very much
for
your time. And let me again tell you, I'm here to help you, brad.white@icann.org. You've got my telephone number, my cell phone number, and your press kits. Sometimes covering an ICANN meeting for the first time can be a kind of intimidating thing for a reporter. I'm here to help you. If I can give you a background, if we can do whatever we can, please let us know. Again, thank you, gentlemen.